Hi,
this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back, welcome back. So I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're going to have a show on one of the questions that man has pondered for centuries, and that is aging. Why do we age? What?
Millennia.
Since millennia, that's true. Forever. As long as we were born, we were wondering about aging. Why do we age? How do we age? How can we lengthen our time on this earth, but make it quality time? So who else did we call back to speak with? Jeff Bowles, and he's written many articles, peer-reviewed published articles. He wrote a book, but now he's rewriting a book on aging. So we thought we'd catch him right in the middle of all this and ask him, what is he thinking? Carol, could you introduce Jeff to our audience, please?
Oh, it would be my pleasure. Jeff Bowles wrote a book about vitamin D quite a long time ago, and it's an international bestseller. He wrote this book, I think, because finally you could do an ebook, so it reflected his research, so you could look at the research he used for his hypotheses. So we've had Jeff on our program before talking about vitamin D, but one of his long-standing interests has been, what is the secret of aging? Why does it happen? And the whole field of aging tends to focus in on somehow our environment affects our genes, and we're sort of victims of aging. Jeff's point of view has been that we are programmed for aging, and he's been especially excited because he proposed this many, many years ago. I think 1998 was your medical hypothesis
paper.
So over the years, the research coming out has validated him over and over again, and now he feels there's an important new study by somebody named Horvat that gives the last piece of his theory and really substantiates the whole thing. So welcome to our program, Jeff, and we are anxious to hear about how this new study affects us, and what are your ideas around programming that our bodies are actually programmed to shut down at a certain point, and what are the things pushing that programming?
Oh, hi. Yeah, so in 1998, I'd spent about 10 years in the Northwestern Med School Library. I had retired young to study aging. I just wanted to put the whole theory together and figure out how to stop aging, because I took on challenges, and I was a workaholic back then. And so I spent just 10 years gathering all the facts that I could about aging. I really had never studied the theories out there about aging. So I just looked at it as a big puzzle, and I had stopped my real estate career and gone back to college to get a biochem degree. It went right to the Northwestern Med School Library. So I put all these puzzle pieces together, and I said, oh, well, this goes here, this goes there. And when I put the whole thing together like a Rubik's Cube, back, I published my first paper about it in 1998, and the conclusion was that aging was programmed, and it's driven by your hormones, and evolution kills us for a purpose. You know, I just always assumed aging was programmed. I looked at my dog, you know, by the time he was 12, he was like really old, and I wasn't even through puberty yet, and I just always thought it was programmed. So I published this paper, and I had all the puzzle pieces in there, like epigenetics. This was the first paper that ever suggested epigenetics controlled aging. I'll explain that more later. And that the next paper that came out that said epigenetics controlled aging was like 12 years later. Some guy from Stanford didn't mention my paper. That's
so
they are.
Explain epigenetics.
Well, okay, I can explain it now. Basically, your DNA is like a whole bunch of genes connected together. Most of them are shut off. Like in a skin cell, you're going to shut off like 90% of the genes. There's only 10% of the genes that tell the cell to be a skin cell. So the epigenetics is the things that shut off the other genes. So it could be a methyl group, which is a carbon with three hydrogens, or it could be a transcription factor. That's just a protein that glops onto the DNA. So it's like it shuts off the gene. The gene gets read in one direction by like a tape recorder head, you know? So epigenetics will just, if you glop something onto the beginning of where the tape starts, the tape reading machinery can't read that gene. So that's all epigenetics is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And, so I had, you know, they had thought epigenetics was only involved in like an ovum or a fertilized egg developing into a fetus and into a baby. Like all the new cells that are made as they're dividing, they all have to have certain genes shut off with epigenetics so they can become nerve cells, hair cells, eye cells. And I was the first person to propose that process continues even after you get older, and it's continuing, and it's causing you to age by pulling off certain epigenetics. And back then, I thought there were aging genes that actually made proteins that killed you. And so as you get older, you lose your epigenetics little by little. And then I was predicting there'd be aging genes that get turned on, and then you self-destruct. Okay, so I published this paper. The other major thing in that paper was I looked at the hormones, and certain hormones that humans have called luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. They're the hormones that trigger puberty. Then they trigger development as a baby up to a juvenile. And then there's another surge of those hormones, and they trigger the development of the juvenile into an adult. And then they continue to control the female's reproductive cycle every month. And then after age 50, in both men and women, there's a whole other surge of LH and FSH. And I predicted in the paper that's what was causing aging. It's all just part of the same development program. Basically, in my world, every day older is actually a day older. But the mainstream scientists, when they read my paper, they were howling with laughter. They all knew that aging could not be programmed. It was impossible. Mm-hmm. Because evolution, one guy, a professor of evolution, sent me a message. He goes, your paper's interesting, kind of, but unfortunately, you don't understand how evolution works. And then another professor in aging science, he goes, you know, I don't really understand your paper, but I do know the difference between a Jackson Pollock piece of art and something my granddaughter did. And he said, your paper is kind of like something my granddaughter would do.
Whoa.
But they didn't really understand what I was saying.
You shook them at the base of their whole belief system to get responses like that.
Well, it turns out everything I said in that paper, one by one, all these crazy predictions that luteinizing hormone would be found to cause Alzheimer's. There are a bunch of other predictions, but that was like the first one that was proven to be true. And the NIH wrote a paper in 2005, or someone at the NIH said, gonadotropins, which is another name for luteinizing hormone, are involved with neurodegeneration. So that was the craziest idea. That was kind of like, I think Einstein predicted that the sun would bend the light coming in from stars, and everyone thought that was crazy, but that turned out to be true. So I knew I was on the right track, but I never did get confirmation that aging really was programmed. I mean, everyone could still make the case. They all thought it was DNA damage, that our bodies accidentally break down over time and the DNA gets damaged. That's what everybody believes in aging science.
I have.
Even to this day.
LH, luteinizing hormone. The ability to conceive is based on the LH surge, which then produces the progesterone. And the progesterone...
Oh, I thought you were about to say that it then produces the idea, conceive an idea. No, you're talking about reproduction.
Reproduction. I'm talking directly physiology. And so I don't understand, I don't understand how it could be the signaler that creates... aging and death.
Yeah, it's also the signal that causes little babies to grow into children. There's also a surge around 10 years old of LH that causes children to enter puberty and become adults.
Exactly.
And then it starts controlling the female reproductive cycle at a certain level. But it stays at a low level. But when it gets to a higher level, after age 50, it starts altering other genes. See, so you're altering different gene sets at different levels of these hormones. I mean, the first gene set it alters is development from a baby to a juvenile. The second surge comes around age 10, and it's like a brief surge. And what's really going on is these hormones are acting as free radicals. And the free radicals are causing epigenetics, like certain methyl groups, things that shut down certain genes. The free radicals cause them to fall off by altering I don't want to get too technical, but basically free radicals cause these little bumps on your DNA to fall off. And then if you stay in a certain range, it can put the bumps back on, take them off, put them on. That's what's going on when you're cycling in your reproductive monthly cycle. So, but then once it gets too strong, it takes those bumps off permanently and starts taking off other bumps, and those are the bumps that cause, when they're gone, that cause aging. And aging's really not caused by DNA damage. It's caused by you're losing these epigenetics, or these things that shut off your genes in different cells. So, for example, in a skin cell, as you age, you're losing these transcription factors or epigenetics, and all of a sudden there's more genes turned on in the skin cell that aren't even skin cell genes. And so your skin cell is starting to forget what kind of cell it is. And then if you kept it on long enough and you took all the transcription factors off, the cell would have no identity other than the same identity of an embryonic stem cell, or like the first cell that produces you, the fertilized egg, has no differentiation. It has no transcription factors. And then as that egg divides, it adds more and more transcription factors, and all the cells become more and more different. So technically, aging is caused by all our cells getting kind of younger in a way, in an unhealthy way. That sounds counterintuitive, but that's really what's going on. So we're basically, if you think about it, you look at babies, they all look kind of the same. They all wear diapers and wet their pants. And then you get to older, really older people. If they're not dyeing their hair too much, they all start looking the same too. So in both cases, they're less differentiated than young adults. Young adults have the most differentiation. So basically, how aging is working is, as you're getting older, up to a certain point, you're getting more and more transcription factors on your genes in all your different cells, and they're all becoming like they're all having maximum differences from other cells. And then as you get older, this thing starts going in reverse, and all the cells are becoming more and more alike, and you're becoming less differentiated. So I was even thinking that it's possible there's certain nerves that control your urine retention and bladder, like uh-huh. Those nerves must be very specialized, and mm-hmm. babies they're not differentiated enough yet in babies, so that's why babies can't. I mean, this is an idea I'm just plucking from air, but I've been working with it lately, and but the babies can't control their bladders and they have to wear diapers. And I'm thinking possibly as we get really a lot older, those transcription factors are starting to come off, and the elderly people have to start wearing diapers. So it's the whole process going in reverse.
Right now.
That's very interesting. That's the number one reason people get admitted to nursing homes.
And right now, adult diapers is a billion-dollar industry. But
yeah.
there is something another thing I wanted to ask you, and maybe it's that I misunderstand something. I always think of epigenetics as the influence that our environment has on our genetic expression. So if you're in a high pollution area, the same genes will express themselves differently. If you're in a very purified, clean environment, those same genes will express themselves differently.
Well,
so,
it's
that's
true,
the way.
Like, it's true in a way. It's for example, it turns out high stress can also accelerate aging in animals. But what's going on there is they have high levels of cortisol. That's also a free radical type hormone. And if you have like too many free radicals of the right kind in the right place, it's going to take those little bumps off your DNA, and it can cause rapid aging or cancer. So yeah, what you say, it does have some validity.
Why don't you tell us about your story about the immortal jellyfish? What you do in your book is you look across the whole world of plants and animals and how they age, and there is such a thing as immortality in the jellyfish. Can you expand on that?
Well, before we get to that, should we just quickly go over the latest two studies that have blown this whole thing at sky high?
Sure.
They're very interesting. I'm in a little circle of programmed aging scientists. There's about four of us.
That sounds fun.
We share papers that are relevant and this and that. One day, Josh Middledorf had forwarded me a preprint of Stephen Horvath's latest study of DNA methylation. That's a form of epigenetics. He has discovered over the years that he can look at your DNA and see how much methylation is left on various genes or gene sites. He can tell you almost exactly how old you are. And those are called DNA methylation clocks, because you generally lose methylation as you get older. And so he did a study with tons and tons of scientists, and they studied, I think, like 120 different mammals, and they looked at 59 different tissue types for what DNA methylation changes occur during aging. And he came up with an amazing, this is more important than Darwin's trip to on the 5-year trip on the Beagle. This is probably more important than that. He found that It turns out in all mammals, there's a conserved aging program that had to be selected for by evolution. It turns out it's a little bit different than I had predicted in my paper. It turns out there are some aging genes, but only about like 10 that lose methylation and become active at older ages. He found 36 genes that are normally methylated when you're young. That means they're shut. Oh, no, they're normally demethylated when you're young, which means they're active. And when animals get older, these genes become methylated and actually shut down. And he looked at what were these 36 genes. They're all genes that make transcription factors that shut down other genes. So that was like, when I saw that paper, I'm like, that's it. This is the final piece of the puzzle. I can now solve the Rubik's Cube. He proved that aging is programmed and showed me exactly how it's happening. And then the crazy thing about this is this also makes every evolution professor out there wrong. The entire theory of evolution is incorrect. And it turns out that one professor said, I don't know how evolution works. The other way around, he doesn't know how evolution works. And I emailed him again, and now he's not responding.
Oops. Well,
and, but, yeah, what happens is these genes are weird because your DNA loses methylation over your lifetime, and by the time you're 70 or 80, you have very little methylation left on your DNA. But there's these weird 36 genes that get methylated, and that's like swimming against the, you know, a hurricane of what's going on in your DNA. And so it's something that must be like really important. And to me, it didn't make any sense because as you get older, these free radical hormones increase dramatically, like LH and FSH. There's also a whole set of antioxidant hormones that are high when you're young, like melatonin, DHEA, progesterone, what else? Even like testosterone. Huh? Oh, pregnenolone. Yeah, so these all drop like 90% by the time you're hitting 50 and 60, while the free radical hormones are going way up. And what that means is inside of all your cells, it's turning from an antioxidant environment to a free radical environment. And when that happens, these enzymes that keep those transcription factors on your DNA, they start working in reverse, or that keep your DNA methylated. So this one was completely backwards. Everything else I saw, it showed that free radicals make you lose your DNA methylation, and these 36 genes, they gained DNA methylation, like swimming against the tide. And so then I kept looking at, well, what kind of enzyme could be causing this to happen? And I found this weird enzyme. It's called they call them TET enzymes, and they're weird. They most like DNA methyl, similar enzymes like a DNA methyl transferase, in the presence of antioxidants will keep putting those methyl groups on your DNA. These TET enzymes work backwards. So when they're in the presence of antioxidants, they keep genes demethylated. And I think these TET enzymes are the ones controlling those 36 genes. So when the antioxidant level goes down, these enzymes quit working, and those 36 genes then get methylated gradually and then shut off eventually. And then all your cells forget what kind of cells they are, and that's what causes aging.
So
this is great in theory. Then there's one more study by Horvath that just crossed my desk, and it was done with him and one of my four or five programmed aging buddies that we have our email chat room. His name is Harold Katcher, and he's like a very accomplished biochemist. And his whole focus of his career has been, he had heard that you give young blood to old rats and it makes them younger.
Oh, I've seen that.
And vice versa, you give old blood to young rats, and it makes them older. So he's been focusing solely on trying to figure out what's going on there. And he did an experiment with rats, and he had Steve Horvath, or independent people, administer this elixir, he calls it, to these rats that were old, you know, they were almost about to die. And they gave him this elixir of various transcription factors that he keeps secret because he's trying to get a patent. But they looked at like four or five different tissue types, and it by giving them injections for like twice a day, every other day for, I don't know, like for 4 days, they discovered that the rats, the cells age of the rats reduced anywhere by 50% to 75%.
Now, are these peptides?
Huh?
Are these peptides? What are we talking about, transcription factors?
Now, they're probably Yamanaka factors. In 2007, a Japanese scientist discovered how to turn an adult cell back into an embryonic cell. Like go take it and age it or de-age it all the way back to the embryo stage or even before that. And he discovered all you need are these four factors, transcription factors. They got these weird names like KL4, one is C-Mic. So they have weird names, but basically they just shut down certain genes. But it's very similar to when they first cloned Dolly, the first cloned mammal. They put an adult DNA into an ovum from a sheep, and they shocked it, and that the egg was able to take that adult DNA and run its aging program all the way in reverse back to time zero.
Wow.
And that's what was going on. That's how you clone things, which proves that you can reverse aging in the DNA. And then Yamanaka proved that you could reverse, you don't need the egg. You can just put these factors into an adult cell and have it run backwards in time and also become like a starter. You could actually almost take like a skin cell and make another human from it if you did it right. He proved that you can run everything in reverse.
Wow.
There's something very, very exciting. One more exciting thing about that I'll tell you, but go ahead and ask your question.
Well, I've got two questions. First of all, you keep on saying the word methylation. And I have multiple patients that come in and say, I have a methylation defect, or I have, so I need an activated methyl tetrahydrate folate. I have a methylation factor, so I need a methylcobalamin B12. So I need an activated B12 and an activated folic acid. What
and trimethylglycine.
Exactly. So what does all that mean? And is this a bit of an exaggeration? Because I've also heard that if you just give quite a bit of B12, you can override that methylation block, or give adequate folate and you can override that. So I've got two questions there, but I've got another one, very important, because I want to bring, I think we've gone very theoretical, and I want to bring it back home to our homes and what we can do in our homes and what does this really mean to us? Now, I know in 15 years it's going to mean a lot, but what does it mean to us now?
What you're asking is not going to really answer that question, but I can answer it a different way. It doesn't really have anything to do with DNA methyltransferases. The theory is, and it's possible, that a DNA methyltransferase is just that's just like a protein that runs around in your DNA. It grabs a methyl group out of the protoplasm and plucks it and puts it right onto your DNA. So it keeps your DNA methylated, those DNA methyltransferases. And some people supposedly have weird ones with a little defect in it, and they're the ones who are saying they have a methyl problem. I don't know how true it is, but there are people that process certain vitamins very well, like folate, if they have this strange mutation in their DNA methyltransferase, but I haven't really researched it that much because I don't have it. But if you want to do something to reverse or slow or even reverse aging, it's very simple. You actually, for any listeners, you might want to go to my website, JeffTBowles.com, no spaces, JeffTBowles.com, and look over the charts in the first blog post. It shows all the hormone changes that occur with age. And basically, all you want to do is reverse those hormone changes back to like an age 20 level, and that should stop, slow, or possibly reverse the aging process. In fact, when you're undergoing caloric restriction, the same thing happens to your hormones. The antioxidant hormones go way up, and the free radical hormones go way down. So that's another confirmation that all this is right, that it's actually what's going on in caloric restriction, which gets mice to age like 40% less, or they live 40% longer.
Could you give us a list? Could you give us a list of the oxidized hormones?
Okay.
And a list of the antioxidant hormones?
Yeah, well, what I do is basically you just can only take antioxidant hormones, and because the best one is melatonin. That goes way up during caloric restriction. It goes way down by the time you're age 50. It controls a bunch of other hormones. It's kind of a master hormone.
Mm-hmm.
So you take a lot of melatonin, it's going to suppress that luteinizing hormone and follicle-stimulating hormone, the evil antioxidant hormones. In fact, women can take 75 milligrams of melatonin a night, and that acts as birth control because it suppresses LH and FSH. And once you've got those suppressed, you've got most of the problem licked. And then you just want to correct any low levels of DHEA, pregnenolone, melatonin, progesterone. So those are all the antioxidants. So you boost those all up, and you're going to slow the aging process as much as you can. I take 400 milligrams a night under my tongue of melatonin. I take 200 milligrams of pregnenolone right before bed. I take 100 milligrams of DHEA. I'm going to bump that up to 200, but I take that around lunchtime. That's when it normally peaks in your body. And I don't take progesterone, but in men, I could rub it on, but it turns out I was taking a lot of melatonin. I had my blood tested at Life Extension Foundation, and Bill Falloon, I forgot to ask to test my progesterone. I sent him an email. I said, hey, get that blood sample and check my progesterone. He goes, okay, and he says, yeah, look, it turns out my progesterone level was like 2 times the top of the reference range for men. So melatonin
was converting it.
Causing me to make up. You're getting it from pregnenolone, probably.
I just discovered one more thing, which I knew about back in 1998. I was looking at all the hormone changes that occur with caloric restriction. And I saw this one little thing, something that went up 1,000% when animals are calorically restricted. But I didn't think much about it. I just thought it's because your body's burning fat instead of like
carbs, sugar,
glucose.
And so I thought, oh, these are just products of burning fat. It's called a beta hydroxybutyrate, BHB.
Oh.
And I never thought much about it. I just kind of assumed it was just because your body's burning tissues to survive. But then I just, I've been Googling it, and it turns out that BHB has all sorts of medicinal effects, like it prevents neurodegeneration, all sorts of things. So I've added that to my list also. You can buy that off of
Amazon. You can buy it by the gallon. We used to use it as a colonic flush with people with colitis. And isn't it a byproduct of fiber and butter? Doesn't butter make it?
No, I know they get it's a that's ketone. Why they call it that's why it's they call it butyric acid, is because it comes from butter.
Yeah, but it's a ketone. Some of the keto testing
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's also, also when you're dieting and starving, it starts circulating in your body. So that's like the keto diet can also cause you to make more BHB, or you can just take it along with your antioxidant hormones. But you probably want to take a lot of that stuff because it went up 1,000% in calorically restricted animals. So that's all I got for it. I mean, and then there's other stuff that acts like antioxidants, like resveratrol, folky root, carastilbein. But they all look like, if you look at their chemical structure, they all look like they could bind to your DNA.
Oh, really?
And, you know, you can't just take vitamin C and stop the aging process because, oh, yeah, it's an antioxidant. It actually has to be the right antioxidant in the right place at the right time. So they haven't gotten, so some antioxidant studies haven't shown any increase in lifespan, but you need the right kind.
How do we find out the right kind in the right spot? Or do we just take them randomly?
That's going to be the hormones. The hormones actually go and co-localize with your DNA, like melatonin. All the steroid hormones have a chemical structure about exactly the same as like a GC base pair or an AT base pair. You know, in your DNA, the G connects to the C. And if you look at that chemical structure, it's the same as all the steroid hormones.
Oh, that's so interesting. So people can actually easily be tested for LH and FSH and see if they're successfully holding it down if they're using hormone therapies and it's started to go up.
Correct.
Well,
yeah, and another evil hormone, which is less well known, is human chorionic gonadotropin. It's almost the same as luteinizing hormone, but that also goes up 500% after age 50 in both men and women.
Yeah, that's astounding. What about TSH, also related? So is people are pumping out a lot of TSH because their thyroid isn't working.
Yeah, that's a similar looking molecule, but I don't remember it being one that increases that much with aging, so I left it off my list. I mean, it looks similar to LH and FSH. What do they call them?
Our paper is out there that say, by the time people reach 60 or 70, 80% of us are hypothyroid, which they would have been looking at TSH to predict that.
Maybe that's another one that probably I just never saw any data on it, but not every experiment has been done.
Now, HCG is a very interesting hormone. First of all, it rises in pregnancy. But at the same point, it's given to make people more fertile, but in very high doses. But it also, when used in low doses, normalizes the hormones that you're calling antioxidant hormones. I think of it as an endocrine reset in a positive way. People seem to get younger when they use it. Their skin gets brighter. And when you do a blood test, males that had a 200, which is a 230 testosterone, which is extremely low, it's way low below normal, when they take HCG, it'll come up to a 600 range. And it'll go into normal. So I'm a little confused when you talk about HCG. I don't understand how and what you're talking about. What?
Well, it's just like LH and FSH. It's good for you to make babies. It's good for you at low levels, certain levels. But you get the high levels later, it's not good for you. And it causes aging. So these things are good for you, and then they become bad for you at much higher
dose. In a blood test, I've never seen HCG in, like, if I just took random adults, I wouldn't get a positive HCG or an elevated HCG, even aging adults.
If you looked at people after age 50, I only found one study on it by a scientist named Ulf. That's all the name I remember. He's from Sweden, but he measured everybody's HCG levels, and it just shows, in fact, that's in one of my books. I'll add that graph to my blog post, but it just shows that it's going straight up after age 50, like 500%. Some people don't go up, uh-huh. but most of them do, at least in his study.
I'm going to start taking blood tests on that. That would be very interesting.
It's also considered a cancer marker. HCG goes way up, being secreted by cancer cells.
It's a marker of fast dividing cells. It's not creating the fast dividing cells. It's a marker, and it shows that cells that are fast dividing.
Well, maybe the body thinks that the cancer cell is actually a developing embryo. And it's actually my paper, I predicted that, my 1998 paper, I predicted cancer was actually our cells trying to go back to their original ancestor state from which we evolved, like the single cell, immortal, photosynthetic life form that probably was the first thing to populate the oceans. And when I was looking at these Yamanaka factors, it turns out the embryonic stem cell that could turn into a human, it gets a misshapen DNA nucleus envelope, and the same thing happens to cancer cells. They look almost identical. And in both cases of embryonic stem cells and cancer cells, they both can become immortal and continue to divide without aging. And they also, neither of them use glycolysis for energy, which is what, you know, they don't use the mitochondrial energy, or they don't use oxygen to break down glucose. Even when oxygen is present, they will not use oxygen to create energy. They do it some other way. And that kind of confirms in my mind that the embryonic stem cell is basically just the same life form that used to float around in the oceans before there was oxygen. It's same with the cancer cell. It's kind of a cancer cell is like a broken, an attempt to make an embryonic stem cell that doesn't go right. But, you know, back in, I think the first life forms had to be immortal, and then aging evolved in later life forms.
Now, you said something before we began talking about Einstein, that you don't really understand anything until you can take your theories and explain it to a 10-year-old. Now, we have just so much time left, and I'd like you to explain to myself, 10 years old, and many other 10-year-olds, old people in the audience, how this and your theories relate to them, their quality of life, and what they can do about it, with a little bit of understanding of what we're talking about. Maybe you could help us that way.
Well, there was that. Before I do that, let me try to quickly explain to a 10-year-old the most exciting thing that's come out of this is the most exciting thought. Is it turns out these, like I told you about the study with the rats, where these Yamanaka factors can reverse cell aging by 50 to 75% depending on the tissue, which means we can actually make ourselves younger with this injection that will be coming soon. And then I was wondering, like, well, if you're already getting technically younger when you're that's causing aging because you're losing transcription factors. And then why would giving Yamanaka factors, which puts transcription factors, it takes you all the way back to like a no transcription factors, like an embryonic stem cell, how can that reverse the aging process? And I thought about it, and it turns out evolution is stupid and blind, and so are these Yamanaka factors. So... Oh, and we didn't talk about the jellyfish. This relates to the jellyfish. But how can you make cells younger with these? An injection of these factors? Turns out Yamanaka factors they can't see, so they can't realize, oh, if I just take off a few more factors, I can jump over and become an embryonic stem cell. It's kind of like cells, they start off with no clothes, and they're putting on transcription factors like shoes, pants, shirts, hats, and then... those make you a different, more differentiated or more an adult that's distinguishable from others. And then to, for aging, it starts taking the hat off, the shirt, the pants, the shoes, until you're down to like one sock. And then you get a shot of these Yamanaka factors. And if evolution was smart, it would just say, oh, I just have to take that sock off and I'll be an embryonic stem cell. But it doesn't know, it can't see, so it has to follow the entire path backwards. So to become an embryonic stem cell, it has to put another sock on, the pants back on, the shirt, the hat, and then it takes the hat off, the shirt off, the pants off, and then it gets back to the embryonic stem cell state. That's kind of like way much longer than it needs to, but it can't see, so that's how it does it. So it turns out you can run development and aging program forwards and completely in reverse. And so that's what allows us to, so if we just give a few blasts of these Yamanaka factors to humans, they'll put like some of their clothes back on, and you know, you get it just right, they'll be back to like wearing a hat and fully clothed. That'd be like your cells are in perfect young shape. And then one thing is, if you give this these factors for more than 5 days, it's called past the point of no return, and all your cells would turn into embryonic stem cells, and you would dissociate like a jellyfish.
That's so funny. Do you know what that is? Did you see the movie Brazil?
Boys from Brazil?
No, Brazil. There was a movie called Brazil, and it was with Robert De Niro, and all these women wanted to get younger, and they kept on doing different surgeries with famous surgeons, and he'd go in and his mother would have another surgery and she'd be like a young girl, and he'd go, mother, and he's his same age, and till finally she went to the most famous surgeon of all. She was covered by a sheet, and he was going to announce her, and he took off the sheet, and there she was, Jell-O.
Well, that turns out that was a very good prediction.
I know. Most sci-fi is.
All right, so let me give you the 10-year-old prescription.
Yes,
for,
please.
Preventing aging and age-related diseases. Basically, all our cells have little bumps on them that keep certain genes shut off, and it tells. So it just keeps, that allows the few amount of cells in a skin cell to tell the cell to be a skin cell, and all the other genes are turned off. So I call those bumps on your DNA. And as you get older, those bumps come off. So if you want to slow the aging process or even stop it, you just got to keep your bumps on. That's the simple way. Keep the bumps on your DNA, and the way you do that is by keeping your antioxidant hormone levels up. Also, certain metals like iron accumulates in your body after age 50, and that's a whole other theory of aging, and it's true that it increases the free radical levels in your cells, while zinc and magnesium also reduce their antioxidant type metals that we need in our diet, and as we get older, we can't absorb them easily, but we accumulate iron, so that's another part of the aging program.
Now,
so basically, you just want to keep your bumps on with the right kind of antioxidant.
Now, when you gave the antioxidant hormones, you included pregnenolone, progesterone, and melatonin. You didn't say estrogen. Where does estrogen fit into that?
Well, estrogen has it's kind of a bisexual hormone. It has antioxidant activities inside the cell, cell, like in the protoplasm. But once it gets into the nucleus, it has free radical effects. So I don't really know how to classify that one.
Interesting.
What do you think, Carol?
Any hormone.
Just like the god Janus, two-faced.
Just like what?
Just like the god Janus.
Oh, Janus, two-faced.
Two-faced.
Well.
Yeah, a lot of all these hormones are good for you at one point, and then can be, well, at least the free radical hormones are all, I mean, you need them to drive your program of development and
That's right. You need the free radical activity some of the time.
Could you list the free radical?
It controls your genes.
You need a balance because the free radicals are stimulant and cause things to happen. But if it's in excess and not controlled by the antioxidant side, you're in trouble.
Could you?
These free radicals also have a side effect of damaging tissues. And that's where all these aging scientists have been focusing on for the last 100 years or so. But that's just a smokescreen for what really causes aging. Is alteration of the activity of these methyltransferases and enzymes that control your transcription factors.
Could you list...
That's the real cause of aging and not the DNA damage, which can all be repaired from free radicals.
Could you list the free radical hormones?
Well, the ones I know of that are major... Oh, yeah, it's luteinizing hormone and follicle-stimulating hormone are the major ones. In fact, and then HCG and cortisol.
And potentially TSH.
Possibly. And basically, you can look up any hormone that stimulates the cyclic AMP pathway is a free radical hormone. That's and then any hormone that's any way associated with the cyclic GMP pathway, those are antioxidant hormones. So that's another thing that was in my paper, all this crazy stuff. It all turned out to be true.
Oh, so this was written many, many years ago, and now...
Yeah, it's kind of creepy how much I nailed it. I got about 95% of it, and I just needed that one last little puzzle piece, and now I say the Rubik's Cube of aging is now solved. I dropped the mic.
Well, you know what? You should have done a sci-fi book. Then you'd find
out. Oh, I was working on one. I never finished it.
Well, just...
Oh, and Carol has a copy of a book I took off the market, but that was about analyzing the book of Genesis in the Bible to see if you can find metaphors for evolution science in there. You know, like the tree of life. The tree of knowledge of good and evil. Those are evolutionary trees, but I won't get into that.
we'll have to have you back, Jeff, and maybe go into that after I've read the book. And Corinne's read the book.
So that's about it. Do we have more time?
I think we have about 2 more minutes. Actually, we're right about there because we then have the beginning and the end. So, Jeff, could you please give us your website? So I know that there's going to be a lot of nerds out there, me one of them, who are going to be looking up all this information on your website, and I want to understand more. So could you give out your website, please?
Yeah, it's Jeff T. Bowles. That's my name. JeffTBowles. And no spaces. It's JeffTBowles.com.
Okay, there's, needless to say, there's tremendous information there. If you go onto that page, sit down and be ready to dive in because it just pulls you in. That's what I was doing before we spoke. Engulfed.
I'm going to write a more simplified blog post for the casual reader.
But for 10-year-olds?
For 10-year-olds.
Yeah, for 10-year-olds and grandmothers.
Evolution for dummies.
Oh, I love it. That's the book I would buy, Evolution for Dummies.
10-year-olds and my mother.
So,
the funny thing is, when I first showed this paper to my father, who's a Stanford MD, he sat me down and he said, "Jeff, I hate to tell you this, but I think you need to see a psychiatrist."
Ay, ay, ay. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I told him, "Oh, man, I can't talk to you. You're as dumb as a rock."
Oh, you said that? That's...
Yeah.
Is he still alive?
No, he passed away, but he finally figured out I was in real estate at the time, and he didn't realize I'd spent 10 years in the basement of the Northwestern Med School Library. He had no idea how much time I'd put into it. And I had a cousin who had been manic depressive, so he was worried I caught that gene. Oh. I just got the manic gene only.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
I'd like a little manic gene myself. So thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate your work. I appreciate you attempting to simplify it for the dummies out here, and myself included. And Carol?
Yeah, Jeff, it's such a pleasure to have you on again. And this is revolutionary. I hope our audience can get a whiff of how important this actually is to us to have this information out there.
Well,
thank you again, Jeff, for your...
It's huge, and it turns out in the end it's kind of simple.
Yeah.
Isn't everything? That's real.
Labor of love on a particular issue is just incredible. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.